On today's episode of the Mets Stub Podcast, we talk about the spring breakout game because holy shit, the Mets were amazing. They looked fantastic. Steve Cohen addressed the media, talks about the future of the team, talks about Pete Alonso and a lot more, as well as we have a viewer mailbag, all that on this episode of the Mets Stub Podcast. What is up, Mets fans? Welcome back to another episode of the Mets Stub Podcast. We are actually super excited to talk to you guys today. You heard how much we love talking about prospects, something we didn't get to do too much in the past, but now we get to talk about them again, and we're ready to rock and roll. The spring breakout game just happened, and the Mets were phenomenal. Like, this is the thing that I think we're the most excited about. Steve Cohen spoke. It's whatever. We'll go over that as well, just because we kind of have to as a Mets podcast, but really the majority of this could be a lot of prospect talk, a lot of pitching talk, a lot about the future of this team. The spring breakout game was amazing. James, we got to live stream it. What were your initial thoughts about how the game went?
I mean, for the Mets themselves, this was as excited, I think, as we've been as Mets fans, basically a calendar year, maybe about 10 total months, like since the season fell apart last year, just like watching a team of Mets players look dominant inning after inning, pitcher after pitcher, lots of hitters having really good at bats, hitting the ball really hard, and then just being able to showcase their talents. Like, this was like third episode in a row. This is the best marketing move by MLB since steroids. And like having these games day after day in spring training, it's been incredible. But also the luck of MLB, not associated with the Mets, but that they got Arizona's one rainstorm a year when they had all the spring breakout games planned. Like, that sucked ass, but it's just incredible. Like, such a good idea. And just so cool to see all these guys in a dugout together, having fun in a lineup together, seeing how all of their positions were aligned when they were in the lineup together, seeing the ways each pitcher was used when they were in the bullpen together. It was fascinating. It was really cool. And like, if you guys tuned into the live stream, you could definitely like hear mine and Mark's excitement as we were going through this game, even though as South Carolina was getting smoked by Auburn in the SEC tournament, Mark was trying to watch both at the same time. But so much fun, so exciting, such a good idea. I'm really excited this is going to be part of like the spring training method now for the next few years.
Okay, so who impressed you the most during the spring breakout game?
I think by far from the Mets, the most impressive guy was Brandon Sproat. We've been hearing about him a little bit since he was drafted last year, I think in the second round, also the second time the Mets drafted him, which was a weird wrinkle, but he didn't pitch professionally at all after the draft. He went right to the Mets pitching lab, which we've heard amazing things about and seen guys improve tremendously after going there. And he's been no different. He was throwing 99 miles an hour, breaking off curveballs and cutters. He had four swings and misses and only five swings that the Nationals had against him. One pitch in play really weakly. Again, 99 miles an hour. We've heard he's been pushing 100. Just, he looks like the kind of guy who can be like this year's Christian Scott, rise through the system in a few months' time, be a double A, and like by next year, be a clear top 100 prospect, somebody who's ready to contribute to the rotation.
Now, I know we asked for mailbag questions at the end, but I did see one about what are the chances of Brandon Sproat getting up to the majors this year? You want to quash that real quick?
Yeah, there's 0% chance. Something crazy would have to happen. There has to be like a massive accident like Binghamton and Syracuse for him to actually wind up coming up to the majors. But he's learning new pitches right now. It's very, I like to use Christian Scott, like invoke that comparison, because they both came from Florida. And both of them were more sinker guys who came to the Mets. And they were like, we think a fastball, four-seam fastball kind of fits your delivery and fits your arms a lot better. And Sproat, just like Christian Scott, he didn't use any in the breakout game because it is more of a showcase. You kind of just want to, you're only going to have, especially in Brandon Sproat's case, like 5 to 10 pitches. Also, fuck MLB for a little bit. Again, great for the breakout, but just the fact that we can't get like accurate pitch counts on these games, like half the spring training games in general, it said Brandon Sproat threw 6 pitches in this outing, but had 2 strikeouts and completed the whole inning. So that has to be more than 6 pitches. Really bizarre how all that happened. But it was just, he wasn't going to throw it in this game, but we've heard that fastball is like up to 18, 19, 20 inches of inverted vertical break, which is like the writhing movement, and at 99, 100 miles an hour. So with that, he still has to get more comfortable working the top of the zone, because that's something that you're going to do more with a fastball than a sinker, which is what he had in the past. But you're definitely not 0% going to see him this year. But I think 2025, it's almost, I mean, if there's a good year this year, everyone stays healthy, like good chance 2025.
Yeah, I mean, watching him in the brief outing that we got to see, he came on the mound and we're like, oh, he's a little bit different. And that's not to say that the Mets pitching besides him wasn't impressive, because it was, but Brandon Sproat had a little bit of a different aura. Another guy that we have not really seen much of that we got to get a firsthand experience with, Nolan McLean. And wow. I know you've got some numbers to share with the people at home that are going to be really eye-opening, but we talked with Tim Healy. We talked with Matt Eddy as well about prospect guys and stuff. And Nolan McLean was a name that came up, and watching him pitch, we're like, oh, I now know why his name was coming up, because he looked fantastic as well. Even Uncle Steve was mentioning him. He's like, I heard he's got really high RPMs on that slider. I don't know what that means, but it's got to be good.
Steve also mentioned Brandon Sproat by name. Like, these were the two guys who kind of jumped on the scene. Mets fans were like, whoa, and kind of like Sproat, that McLean, he did go to the Mets complex last year to play games. It was as a hitter because he's still a two-way player. He had 25 plate appearances last year between the Mets complex team and St. Lucie, but only pitched three innings because he also was in the lab working on his stuff. And this slider that Nolan McLean has might have been the best-kept secret in baseball, because the sliders that he threw in the breakout game on Friday would have been some of the best pitches thrown in the entire Major League Baseball season last year. It was 87 miles an hour, 3,200 RPMs, which that would have been the most RPMs for average spin a slider last season by over 200. The highest,
even more than Matt Brash?
Yes, more than Matt Brash. And this slider actually did look to me like Matt Brash. Like, the first thing I thought about was, this is Matt Brash. This is Matt Brash. Because he was also throwing a fastball, 98. And that slider, with all that spin, was also 87 miles an hour. It was just like, the way he was throwing that was shocking. He's a guy, he's probably still going to take a while, because the Mets have said they're going to develop him as a starter, which I don't think he's really done that much. And he probably will need some more pitches. But he also was throwing a cutter and a curve, and both of those graded out incredibly well, too, with the fastball and the slider. Like, I don't want to exaggerate, but I think Nolan McLean could be like a legit lights out reliever in Major League Baseball on opening day this year. Like, again, just, we have to play the long game here, and we have to see if we can develop and create an elite starter. Because you could even be like Matt Brash, where you get to the major leagues, the command isn't there to start, so you just still wind up in the bullpen as a dynamic, dominant late inning reliever. But the things that he was doing, and I've talked about this person on the podcast a few times this spring, Thomas Nestico, TJ Stats, and he had Nolan McLean. He does Stuff Plus, which is a basing out of 100, so over 100 is very good. 100's average. 134 Stuff Plus in the slider. One of the best pitches anyone has thrown in spring training this season.
Damn.
And he was gushing about the Mets in this game, where it's like every single guy was throwing bullets. And
yeah,
McLean and Sproat led that.
Well, I mean, like, McLean and Sproat, like we said, look great. But even like going to the start of the game, Dom Hamill getting it started, a guy that Mets fans have been hearing about now for 2-3 seasons. He's a guy who's going to come up to the majors at some point this year and make an impact.
Yes.
Whether that's as a back-end starting rotation guy or in the bullpen, he's going to have value with this team, especially because like that fastball plays really well. That sweeper is good. We got to see him live in Somerset, like we mentioned a couple times when we went for the championship game. And we were really impressed, because he's one of those guys, I think, that while like McLean and Sproat are going to be like more of like the StatCast darlings, where you're like, wow, like these numbers jump off the page. It does look like Dom Hamill is just like maybe not at that level, but still very good.
Yeah, shame on us, honestly, for not talking about Hamill enough over the last year, because he has been doing a lot of things that are really exciting. Something about the shape of the seasons the last few years was weird, that he always seemed to start cold, both 2 years ago when he started the year in Brooklyn and wound up in Binghamton, and last year when he spent the whole season in Binghamton, but he would just click in the middle of the summer, then go roughshod right through the league. Like last year, again, we saw him that game. That was the clincher of the Eastern League to go to the finals. And he pitched into the eighth inning in a minor league playoff game. And he was flexing, he was jamming, yeah. He was beating a Yankees team that was the best team in that league the entire year, where Binghamton kind of shot up in the second half when all these guys came to the roster and got good. And Hamill's fastball, I think, was the most impressive, because it's just, he had one of those like pure fastballs you want to see in the major leagues now, with that riding action at the top of the zone. And when he was putting in the top of the zone, it was amazing. He was getting whiffs on it, and he was getting it up to 95, 96, 97. He was breaking the sweeper off with it. The curveball's good. And something else really impressive about Hamill is that he was breaking off changeups that were graded out as an average pitch based on TJ Stats Stuff Plus in the spring, and a curveball that was also, and a cutter that was also average. So the fact that he was using a pure five pitch mix, he kind of comes in somewhere between Scott and Vassell, where Scott has the best pure stuff out of all these guys, but just because he's only 2 years removed from transitioning from reliever to starter, there probably isn't as much workload that he has, at least maybe until next year. Like, he maybe only has 100 innings on the whole arm this year. Whereas Vassell, like, we're confident in his workload. We're confident like in his ability to pitch innings, but the stuff isn't at the same level as these guys. But Hamill's like right in between. Hamill's thrown over 250 innings in the minor leagues over the last 2 years. He's gotten stronger each year the season's gone on. He's shown an easy ability to mix four and even five pitches at times in stints in the minor leagues. Like, he's a very well-rounded pitcher, and someone who Mets fans should be very aware of, because I'd be shocked if he's not contributing Queens at some point this summer.
A lot of testosterone too out of Dom Hamill. Dude's dripping in tea. He could use it. He's always pumping. I think he's got the tattoo sleeve as well, right? Yeah. On the arm, which yeah. I kind of like that from a pitcher. We don't see that too often. Another guy we got to talk about too on the pitching side. We've got two more pitchers to really talk about here. Tyler Stewart, someone who, again, we've both spoke about, we haven't been able to see a lot of him just because he's not one of these top pitching guys. And usually, like from the clips that you see on Twitter, it's good. There's like a hierarchy of who you're going to be able to find. And Tyler Stewart, we know, had the good results last season, but we didn't know what the stuff really looked like. And got to say, the mountain of a man looked also phenomenal. He looks like someone where it's like going to be really hard to hit the ball in the air and with any sort of oomph off of him.
he's another guy too that the Mets has a college reliever and converted him into being a starter. And I think like we talked about, it, I think it was Southern Missouri, right? Like yes, from that, that like low key no, pitching.
Southern Mississippi.
Yeah, but his 2.2 ERA last year was one of the lowest for any pitcher across all levels in the minor leagues through at least 100 innings down there. Yeah, whole thing, entire gross. Minor league baseball. Yeah, and he's 6'9". He's a monster. He got his thing. He's not going to miss as many bats as these guys because he's just like kind of a sinker and he drops off a changeup and a sweeper, but he gets a ton of ground balls, over 50% last year in the minor leagues. And in this outing, three very lazy ground balls against him while he was throwing 97-mile-an-hour sinkers from like this big extending release point because he's 6'9". He looked amazing.
Sorry for those at home. I had to control a dog I'm watching.
Yeah, funny wrinkle this episode. Mark's dog sitting for a few weeks for our buddy Sammy. So we got that going on. But the last pitcher to talk about here briefly is Calvin Ziegler. And I like the fact that Hamill started this game and Ziegler closed it because those two were like the main picks in the first ever Steve Cohen draft class in 2021. Like that was when like the tide started to shift, which is like we are now looking for guys with pitch characteristics and pitch traits. And Ziegler's had a weird time over his last few years. He's been injured. He had bicep tendonitis. He had bone spurs last year, only got into one inning in the minor leagues the whole season, struck out the side in that one inning, but fastball, slider, curveball all looked electric. 97-mile-an-hour fastball, elite shape. It looks like he's put on some weight since the Mets drafted him too. He was a skinny kid out of high school, Canadian. He even had to leave Canada at home to go transfer to a baseball academy in Florida as a senior in high school because that was 2021. We had travel restrictions. Teams weren't even able to go across the border to actually get a look at him. So he did that for his draft stock, and then we took the shot on him. It's been up and down since, but seeing that stuff, it's impressive.
Yeah, because I remember when they drafted him, like you were – like, oh, this is the guy that they're all really excited about. This was the guy who had the great stuff numbers. And now it's just about stretching him out, making him into a starter, whatever it's going to be. And you could totally notice that. And putting on the weight's definitely a huge thing, too. He's a pretty strong-looking dude. There's no doubt about that. But the pitching looked great. And this is something that I think that maybe Mets fans should take a little bit of note of, is remember how bad the pitching was in the farm system, apparently, from all those experts that were talking at the time. Oh, Mets got no pitching, this and that. How quickly things can turn around when you have the right people in place. This is why it's so important to have good process. Why bringing in a guy like David Stearns, Steve Cohen, getting Eric Jaegers, getting that analytics department is so important. The old Mets are not doing this. They're not just turning these random players into exciting prospect pictures. And also on the same regard, just because they're not listed on the MLB pipeline, or even like we love Baseball America, but even because they're not listed on there, like sometimes you don't have the ability to see all these guys play in person every single time. Sometimes you have to pick guys like Drew Thorpe to be on that list, even though the Mets might have like five better guys than him right now. Like the idea that the Mets had bad pitching was a bit of a lazy take based on what you'd seen in prior years. But in reality, the Mets have a kind of loaded farm system. We even heard Steve Cohen say, we're stacked right now. And that's not something that you could have even said at the beginning of last year.
And it's also, you kind of have to get really recognized by scouts, pipeline, Baseball America, prospectus, Fangraphs. You kind of need to do just a little bit more consistently. Yeah. Like Nolan McLean threw three innings last year in the minor leagues and walked like half the batters he faced. Like that's just not going to get you on the list. That's going to be like, oh, this guy's exciting. There might be stuff here. But that's why the showcase game is so cool, where I can see one inning of Nolan McLean and be like, holy shit, this guy's throwing frisbees. Yeah. Or one inning of Brandon Sproat and be like, his demeanor and mindset on the mound and his powers, like this is special. And even a guy like Ziegler only got through one inning last year. Like he was fell off these prospect lists and could come back in the way he's come back. It's process, it's patience, and it's also credit to the organization for keeping Jeremy Hefner in there and trusting him, letting Jaegers build this thing from the bottom, having more development people who we don't even know about because they're listed so low, who are working with these guys day in, day out, creating plans for them, having workout strategies, pitch design, pitch development. It's just everything really seems to be working. And right now it's kind of apparent that the Mets have a fleet of pitching in this minor leagues. And it's something that once it kind of starts happening, and we've seen this organizations like the Dodgers and the Rays and the Astros,
Cleveland,
the Guardians, the Mariners, like once you start to hit in these pitching things and you know the process, you can go step by step. Suddenly it just starts to roll. And that's why we've talked about guys like Wyatt Uthapol. I've seen Cade Morris, another 2023 draft pick, get some hype recently. Like Paul Gervais, other guys who didn't get into the spring breakout game, Paul Gervais, Wilkin Ramos, like Daniel Juarez, Joe Andres Suarez. Like there's suddenly a fleet here, and pitching's expensive, as Steve Cohen said. So to have this cradle of pitching now that we can trust for hopefully the next few years, the next part of this definitely is getting through these guys to the major leagues and seeing it happen there. Because we can be as excited as we want. They're placing Nationals minor leaguers, probably the worst farm system in the whole league. But
not anymore.
But the bottom end, it's probably like in the 20s still. But without the top two guys, we're going to graduate by June. It becomes one of the worst.
Drew Milas, the 26-year-old catching prospect, you weren't interested in him?
two hard hit balls in this game against the Mets, this incredible Mets pitching.
Yeah, he's in his fucking prime. I'd hope so.
But like, that is the next step. Like, we can be as excited as we want about prospects, but they are still prospects. There's still a lot of bust and risk on pitching prospects. But the fact that we seem to have hit something here consistently, and every single guy that pitched in this game, I'll say, looks like a major league caliber pitcher. And most of them look like major league caliber starters. And it's just, it is a small sample. And maybe I'm drinking some Kool-Aid, but just that's how it feels. That's how it looks. And that's what we're going with.
Yeah. And in terms of like the one pitcher we have not mentioned, Blade Tidwell, it's not that we don't think highly of him. It's just, there's not really anything of note. He kind of got like ding, ding, doinked a little bit in this appearance as well. Hard ground balls through the hole here and there. It's just, we wanted to really highlight the guys that maybe you don't have as much information on. We haven't got to see him throw 100 innings. And these guys did look great. Now on the hitting side of things, where do we want to start, James? Who was the most impressive hitter for you? Was it a guy by the name of Jesus Baez, maybe?
Honestly, he was. If you guys listen to the stream, I was talking about Baez before he came up, because he's kind of the twitchy guy in the like low in the Met system, who they love his traits. He's like 5'10", 5'11", but he's built like a fire hydrant, just like a thick guy with a lot of torque, a lot of spin. And he hit the ball 112 miles an hour in this game. Yeah. Harder, I said I tweeted it, like, that's half a joke, but we're going to use this bit in the podcast a lot this year. That's harder than Nolan Arenado has ever hit a baseball, ever. His entire major league career.
And harder than Ozzie Albies has ever hit a baseball.
Yes, two perennial all-stars, one Hall of Famer and one guy who Marks always thinks is overrated. But it's just him hitting a ball 112 to teenagers, freaky shit. Like, his previous high, like, digging through scouting reports, Eric Logan-Hagen said it was about 108, 109, which would put him in like the top 50 percentile of Major League Baseball players as an 18, 19-year-old. This puts him in the top like 80 percentile of Major League Baseball players and the top 99 percentile of teenagers. Like, that is not a joke. And that, like, that, and we kind of hinted at that last week before the breakout. Like, there are situations where one thing can change someone's prospect standings. And this was literally it. Like, now we have someone with like 70 grade raw power in the system.
Yeah. He would currently fall into the 110 slot among qualified hitters right now, 110 out of 259, around guys like Brandon Nimmo, Jared Kelnick, Max Kepler, Paul Goldschmidt. And it's only a couple couple ticks lower than JD Martinez, who Mets fans are clamoring for. So, Just goes to show you, like, you know, these prospects, what they can do. It's so interesting. Like you said, this game is so awesome. How many of you have ever seen Jesus Baez hit a baseball? Probably none of you. You got a chance to see it, and you're like, oh, my goodness. Going to keep an eye out for him. Someone else I want to keep an eye out for, Marco Vargas. I spoke about when I saw him in PSL, how impressed I was with his bat in late innings of the game. Even more impressed with what we saw in this game. The dude has a command for the strike zone. I think we've said Matt Eddy is called, like, these guys before, very hitterish. And if you watched him in this game, you would totally understand it. He had like an 0-2 count against Harlan Susana, who honestly might have the nastiest stuff in the minor leagues from what it looks like. The guy was throwing 103 with like ease. There might be more behind that, which was kind of crazy. And he was down 0-2 and worked a walk against him, fouled off some pitches, took some close ones, spit on some sliders. That to me is the thing that separates those guys, because like, you have the ability to get stronger by working out. You have the ability to, like, whatever, work on things. But like, the actual way that he sees the pitches, the plate discipline at such a young age, just absolutely awesome.
I thought it was interesting that Vargas and Alex Ramirez were the only two Mets to play all seven innings of this game. So each of them had the opportunity to have three plate appearances, because I use plate appearances instead of at-bats, because Vargas in his three plate appearances walked twice, one off the 0-2 into Carlos Susana, another one that I think he was down the count and worked a couple foul balls, and then the one ball he actually put in play, he opposite fielded it for 100 miles an hour off the bat to the warning track. And it's like, you see barrel control, you see balance, athletic looking in the box, and you see a guy who, it looks like a coup that the Mets had got him, as well as Ronald Hernandez, who appeared in this game for
David
3 months of David Robertson with a 5 ERA for a Marlins team that had no business being in the playoffs, but it was beautiful. And the other hitter that you mentioned that Matt Eddy did call hitterish, Jeremy Rodriguez, he had one at bat. He had a nice piece of hitting, put the ball for, I think, an RBI actually over the shortstop's head. We're just shortstop, second baseman.
Shortstop.
But it's just like, oh, wow, this is a teenager playing in this game. And he looks very equipped to handle himself. And it, again, you just, there seemed to be a readiness among these Mets prospects. These guys wanted to be in this game. Like, and it's funny looking back at it, because I think the ones who were the most disappointing, ironically, were Jet Williams, who just seemed like he was like ready to go, like maybe a little too ready. Luis Angel Acuña, who you guys kind of saw the downside of him as a prospect, where he takes some hacks, the head will fly off, will swing at a breaking ball below the zone. It's just not, his pitch selection with struggles right now. And then Alex Ramirez, who he had a fine game, like it wasn't that bad, but like he didn't drop a ball in the outfield like James would, but
yeah.
it was so fun to see these guys play. Ryan Clifford had an amazing two out RBI hustle double in the first inning where he served it over the third baseman's head. It didn't even make it to the wall, and he slid to second base for a double that I didn't expect him to get there for. Nick Morabito, who someone we're excited about from an athletic standpoint, he looks more like a football player than a baseball player. He stung one. Yeah, definitely good running back or nice, like a college receiver in the MAC or something.
Slot, yeah.
Yeah, like a good slot in the MAC. But Drew Gilbert stung one, just like kind of looks, as we've said the whole time, the most ready out of all these guys. Kevin Parada put some wood on the ball, and we actually got to see him catch for the first time. And again, I'm a little worried about him defensively back there, but at least as a hitter, he looked comfortable and competent, yeah, which is a nice step. And then even Acuna, so he took some bad at bats, but he still put one in the air 100 miles an hour. So there's so much to be excited about with this system right now. It's also nice. These guys seem like they like each other.
That's what I was going to bring up. I was like, we've seen like so many groups of Mets prospects recently. Like they all just like Beatty, Vientos, Alvarez, Mauricio, like those guys. And you have like the Pete, McNeil, like that group. You have Nimmo, Conforto, like when those guys came up. It's really cool to see that they're like still keeping that in a way, because they were completely fucking with Drew Gilbert when he was getting interviewed by Michelle Margot, who, if you've watched SNY, you're aware of who she is. But like Drew Gilbert was standing there with the arms crossed, pushing up the muscles. They're throwing seeds at him. He's getting all red in the face. I'm like, that's the kind of stuff that like, that's what I loved about playing baseball. Like, we just get to hang out with the guys and like fuck around a little bit, and it's not so serious. And it's cool to see that, like, a game that is important for a lot of these guys, that they were still able to just kind of relax and still have fun.
Yeah, it was cool. And the last guy I wanted to bring up, just because I think he's the type of prospect who will become a cult hero for Mets fans in the exact same ilk as Jake Mangum, was Rylan Thomas, who is a senior from USC, who actually hit a ball 99 miles an hour in this game, got a hit, came around, scored the run. He was the Mets organizational gold glove winner last year. And it was another guy who went to Binghamton at the end of the year and was a very important piece for them defensively and just as like a cog in the bottom of the order. Twice as many almost walks to strikeouts across the minor leagues last year. Freaky bat control, freaky plate discipline. He's like a fun guy who could be cool organizational glue at some point for a Mets roster, fourth, fifth outfielder type.
Yeah, overall, I mean, success, major success. I think if you're a Mets fan, if you're a fan of baseball, you saw what the Mets were able to do in this game with the players, and you go, oh shit, they got something cooking over there. Like, I know MLB Pipeline doesn't love us necessarily in terms of like top farm systems, Baseball America and I think Prospectus do. It's hard not to be excited about these young guys that are there. Again, like you said, they're still prospects. There's still a lot of time. We've seen kind of similar stuff happen with some guys right now that we were really excited about. Like Beatty and Vientos were two guys that were really high on. Still high on Beatty. We'll never give up hope on him. But it's like you can tell that sometimes no matter how good they are in the minors, you have to be able to get it done at the major league level. But still, even having these guys and hearing comments that the Mets have made over the last few days that they would consider now moving some of these guys if they could get young, controllable pitching in the future. These are all things that you can help build a sustainable organization. And while it's like so boring and not sexy at all for the Mets, who haven't won shit in forever, to be talking about sustainability, that's what happens when the Wilpons hand you the keys to a fucking lemon. And you're like, what do I do with this? How do I fix this?
And it is a bullshit cliche, but like anything in life, any business relationship, anything you're trying to build, like it always starts from the bottom. You got to build a strong foundation. Like that's what the Mets have spent a lot of time, and Steve Cohen under the radar spent a lot of money doing these last couple of years, and seeing the fruits of this pay off because MLB had this breakout game. Like, it's just a cool moment for the whole organization, honestly. And I am happy as fans, as people who talk about this team, like that we got to experience it and everybody seemed like one kind of from it. And we actually did get the win, which was cool. They're like, they were like, it looked pretty excited to actually win the baseball game, which was nice.
Totally. Yeah, no, it was cool. And again, like, it was cool to hear Steve Cohen mention like Nolan McLean. I'm sure it's cool for Nolan McLean too. Be like, oh shit, the billionaire owner knows who I am. Like, this is pretty cool. Like, he's talking about me to the reporters when they're talking about the games. And he mentioned a bunch of other pitchers as well, Sproat, Hamill, Scott, whatever it was going to be. But we also got some more information out of him. And he talked about the vibes in spring training, that they feel very loose, expects the team to be competitive. It was, for lack of a better term, not a lot of information given. It was kind of a nothing burger. But at the same time, like, there are some interesting things. Like, he made comments about Alonso.
Yeah, this was the classic Steve Cohen press briefing that we've gotten a few of these last few years, where he's like, oh my God, I'm so relatable. I'm such like a nice, funny guy, but he's also the richest man anyone's ever going to see with their eyes in the world. But he's like, he talks about the team kind of like we all talk about the team, which is kind of just a fun thing. Yeah, it's like, he's just like us for real. He's like, I'm excited about this defense. We were giving him four outs last year. Now we're going to see some diving plays. Like, I like that. And he was like, this bullpen looks pretty deep. Like, that's nice. Like, I like how much pitching we have this year. And like, Nolan McLean, he had 3,200 RPM spin rate in a slider. I don't know what that means. I think you guys know what that means, but it sounds like a lot of spin to me. Like, it's just, it's funny to hear how relatable Steve Cohen is when discussing the Mets, and just the fact that he's like, yeah, some things last few years worked out, some things last few years did not work out. Yeah. And now we have got a person in place in David Stearns who I trust. They were like, how do you feel about adding to the team? He was like, that's a David Stearns decision. Like, if he has something he thinks is an idea, like, he'll bring it to me and then we can evaluate. But like, that's all on him. I think that's the big change of tone for the last few years. And Steve talked about that too. He was like, I was much more hands-on with the team that probably should have been or wanted to be the last few years. Now I have business people and baseball people in high positions of power that I trust, and I can let them do their thing.
I mean, listen, I can't blame him either. If I owned a baseball team, I totally would want to get my hands all over the day-to-day. Like, that's why we play MLB The Show and make a franchise. You're like, this is so much fun. I could do this better. We even attempted the other day. It's a video that might go into the bowels and never be seen. But like, the idea that, and he mentioned it too, he's like, I'm not great at the day-to-day. I'm better at the big picture stuff. That's what's made me all this money. Just even acknowledging that, I think, is cool, especially from the Mets fan side of like, we got the right people in place. I trust them. They got the big picture thing down, and we'll start building something here, which it's probably hard for a Mets fan to hear right now after one of the most disappointing seasons they've ever had after a quick exit in 2022. But again, it's what you kind of need. Like, the Dodgers haven't won a World Series since 1988. Like, it's hard. It's hard to win a World Series, even if you have the best stuff going, but at least you give yourself the opportunity every year.
He even said that. He was like, yeah, last few years didn't work out. Like, he's like, well, based on what I was handed, I knew the only way to bridge the talent gap was just get free agents, spend a lot of money. And we tried to do it. And they got kind of relatively close once. They kind of choked when they mattered most. But in terms of what the last 3 years could have been, like having 1 year of 100 wins for as bad as this roster and organization were in place by the time you bought it, it's like, it's not that bad. And the whole thing that fucked up Mets fans was, he was like, 3 to 5 years, I'll be disappointed if we don't win one. So everyone
never said that.
Everyone clung to that shit. He made jokes about it in this. He was like, yeah, you guys kind of took that more than I did, but like, you have to set big goals. And he's right. Like, fuck it. Like, if I had $20 billion and bought a baseball team, I'd be like, yeah, I want to win a World Series next 3 to 5 years. People would be like, holy shit, he wants to win a World Series next 3 to 5 years. Like, you're the king. But set big goals and achieve them. He's like, yeah, now I can focus on my hedge fund, which is cool. But he also said, like, with this farm system that we have, plus the resources that we have, that's how this becomes exciting. And he was like, yeah, his prospects, one after another. Seems like we really got a lot of good stuff going there. I like our player development. Me fucking too, Steve. Me too.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And again, to briefly mention Alonso, talked about and made a joke about it. Like, oh, finally, you guys asked me about Pete Alonso. Can't believe it took you this long. And basically, that they have no talks on a long-term deal. They're not worried about him going to free agency. They had Nimmo, they had Edwin, who were in very similar situations, went to free agency, and they got him back. So it seems like, from his perspective at least, he's very confident that the Mets are at least going to have a pretty good shot at bringing Pete back, and that it's not as big of a priority as it's made out to be to sign him right now.
I also don't think it ever was. It's another thing that the media kind of just did for no reason, where it's like, how Scott Boras guys literally never signed extensions. We told you guys about this a few episodes ago when we did our just Pete Alonso contract discussion and quit the player preview stuff that we were trying to do. It was just like, he's had three guys sign extensions ever, and two of them were Jose Altuve. It just doesn't happen for his clients. That's part of his game. Sometimes you're going to have guys sitting out in free agency on St. Patrick's Day. That's just going to happen. That's the game he plays sometimes. But that's Scott Boras, who Steve also said he likes talking to, thinks he has a good relationship with, which is hilarious.
I mean, it would make sense for Scott Boras to like this guy and tell him whatever he wants as well. He's got the most money in baseball.
I'd like to talk to Scott Boras. Scott Boras seems like one of the most interesting, like, smart, fascinating people in baseball.
Open invitation to Scott Boras. If you ever want to come on the Mets the podcast, we got you. We'll happily allow you. We'll pay for your flight out to New York. You can come hang out. We'll do it. Anything. Pay for your hotel, unless it's like the Ritz-Carlton, which I don't think we can afford. Yeah, you're sitting economy, but...
Yeah, we'll pay for Scott Boras' coach flight to New York. 100%. He definitely needs that.
Put him up in the Holiday Inn in, like, Penn Station. Like,
I'll throw him in, like, in these horrible hotels down Ridgewood. Really see some culture.
Yeah, on 21st Avenue, Astoria. Put him real close. Going around there. But yeah, I think that's pretty much it in terms of, like, actual baseball stuff. We do have some mailbag that we want to go over because you guys asked us some questions. And, of course, we love the support you guys continue to show us. So this is our way to kind of just say thank you back and let you guys get involved. First one coming in from Jenny Metz. You guys know him well over on Twitter. This one's specifically for me, but you're also going to answer it. I don't know why I was singled out with this.
Yeah.
For at Draft Fuck McMark, off, which prospects will come up first pitching-wise? I'm thinking Vassell or Hamill. Any sleepers? I think it's going to be Vassell. I think Vassell's going to be the guy that we see first right now. I think the fact that he did not pitch in the spring breakout game kind of just tells you he's a little bit ahead of Dominic Hamill in terms of guys that they think are probably MLB ready. But at the same time, They're both going to be in AAA competing with each other, essentially, to find out who that next guy is. So it's going to come down to who pitches the best. And there's no reason it can't be Dominic Campbell.
Yeah, and I think also same for Christian Scott, as the resident Christian Scott guy in this podcast. It's good. It's a three-headed race right there. Whoever has the best first month, they'll get the first shot when we get in there. Yep. And like, I don't know. Maybe we'll see what happens with Tyler McGill. Jose Budo's been awesome. The Mets say they like Max Kranich as a depth piece. So it all kind of depends on that. But in terms of all of them, who's pitching first? Vassell's probably the safe choice, but I think Scott is still going to be my choice because I feel like he could just fuck people up.
That's your boy. You love Christian Scott.
Love Christian Scott. He's fucking awesome.
Find someone who looks at James who looks at Christian Scott like James does.
Yeah, or like looks at you like Christian Scott. Like, that's I look at Christian Scott. There you go. You almost got it, though.
I'm not good at that stuff. We know that.
Nah. Next question I wanted to do from someone who actually DM'd me, because we're just talking about prospects, talking about minor league stuff. I want to get it out of the way. From Ari, Obi-Wan Kenari. Could add. Sure. Yeah, DM me this question. So you guys, again, if you ever want to just DM, talk about stuff, like I'm ready to go. Back in 2022, Alvarez and Bathe were the top two prospects in our farm system and high up in many top 100 lists. Fast forward today, ready to throw the bag at Alvarez, and we're worried about Bathe. Two questions. Did we mess up Bathe's development while simultaneously helping Alvarez's? And can we use these lessons from each to effectively handle trajectory of our current crop of top prospects, Jet, Drew Gilbert, Acuna, or is the whole thing just a crapshoot? Thanks.
Now, I'll say this. I don't know. Like, it's very, very hard to know what the day-to-day is of what's going on in the minors while Brett Bathe and those guys were in the system. But they all had success, like you said. And I don't think that this is necessarily a detriment to the Mets or Brett Bathe. I think it's a little bit more that Francisco Alvarez is fucking him. Like, he's just that dude. He was never going to allow himself to not be a good player. He's not. And I'm not saying that Brett Bathe is content. But he's got the best tattooed on his neck. And we've heard it from major leaguers. I'll say it a million times. Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander, Hall of Fame pitchers, who very, very set in their ways. They want their guys. Martin Maldonado was a Houston Astro forever for no reason, because Justin Verlander loved pitching to him. Max Scherzer had, what was it, Kurt Suzuki hanging around with the Nationals forever. Like, these guys have very specific things that they like. And they saw Francisco Alvarez like, that's our catcher. Like, sorry, Tomas Nino, you're dead. Francisco Alvarez, we want you. And he's just built differently. Now, on the side of Bathe or Vientos or Mauricio, whatever the other guys that you're comparing them to, it's hard. Being a major leaguer is difficult. You can dominate the minors, and you still might not be ready yet. And then it starts to get in your head, and you start to hear the New York media, and you hear the asshole fans who like to boo you. Like, there's a lot of things, I think, off the field that make it hard as well as on the field. It's just really hard to be a good Major League Baseball player. That being said, I haven't given hope on any of these guys. But I think the difference is just that Francisco Alvarez has that X factor, and that's not a detriment to the guys who don't.
Yeah, Alvarez is just closer to being a superstar than a regular human being. Well, the other guys are just regular human beings trying to make it. Again, we're not going to quit on Brett Bathe. 2 years ago, he was the best player in the whole Eastern League. He had the highest WRC+. Like, he dominated every single level he was at when he got there after a little while. So that's still in play. But it's just, again, a thing with Bathe that I think happened where Alvarez, the defense was better than people expected. So he started getting positive reviews. Yes. And Bathe, he was worse than people expected, getting negative reviews. And a lot of that came back to the Mets coaching staff that was in place the last few years. That wasn't really putting Brett Bathe in the exact proper positions to not even just succeed, but just even to be average. So you start to make a bad play in the field, then you come to the plate and you take your defense to the plate with you. You have a bad at bat, you take it back in the field with you, and things just kind of start to snowball. And that's how it's felt with Bathe so far in his career. So I don't think it's something necessarily about what the Mets have done developmentally, to answer your question, Ari, that has kind of made those two jettison away from each other. It's just that Alvarez is something that's so special, and Bathe's just been more or less a series of unfortunate events. And sadly, sometimes a series of unfortunate events as a baseball prospect can derail your entire career. Like, we've seen that happen to a guy like Jared Kelenic, for starters, who struggled at first, was supposed to be the savior, bad, sent back down, came up, bad again, bad, sent back down, came up, good, then bad, then punches a wall in the locker room, and then he's out, and then he's having another bad spring training, and the Braves bring Adam Duvall to compete with him. It just kind of happens sometimes. That's just prospects. That's just baseball, Susan. And again, I don't think it's not like there's a lesson to learn from there, but probably the lesson is just that you have to put these young guys in position to succeed right away. And you can never put too much on somebody's plate unless they demand more. This is something that I like to pull examples from different sports a lot, because like player development, young players coming to the league, there's always some similarities about it mentally and stuff. And Bill Walsh always said that he would give his rookies 5% of the playbook, the famous 49ers head coach. Like, if he had a defensive end who was a really good pass rusher, he'd be on the field for 10 snaps a game. He'd say, pin your ears back, rush the passer, build your confidence, and do what you do best. When you're ready for more, I'll give you more. Bill Belichick also did that really well with the Patriots for the last generation, where it's just, I will give you exactly what I think you can do well. And then when you've proven that you can get more, I will now give you more. It's harder to do in baseball because there's a lot more things you have to do to be on the field regularly. But a guy like Beatty's just like, hit against righties and play good defense. Hit against righties, play good defense, have some good at-bats. We don't really care about the results. Just look comfortable out there, throw the ball to first base, and then we're going to keep growing off that. I think that's probably what is going to happen this year and what I hope keeps happening.
Totally. And one of the only coaches that also came back from that staff last season, Glenn Sherlock, what did he do? Francisco Alvarez catching. Joey Cora and Wayne Kirby, what were they doing? Infield, outfield? Not here. So I think that that also speaks a little bit if you want to talk about the development at the major league level, what was going on the last few years. Got another question here from Richard Hernandez. This guy's always hitting us up on Twitter. Appreciate you, Richard. He was like, we know Nimmo, Lindor, Pete are the 1, 2, 3. 4 through 9 doesn't really matter as much to me, but what is the best lineup the Mets can throw out there after those first three guys? So I'll give it to you first, James. What are you thinking?
I want to say something funny too. Shout out another listener who I've been DMing with, Will Lupica. He is much smarter than me, especially in terms of math. I did like a very simple reduction in the last episode about Pete Alonso getting up as few times as possible with men on base by ensuring he leads off as few innings as possible, which happened way more often than it should have last year. But he did a whole statistical analysis regression about like where Pete Alonso can be up the most often with players on base ahead of him. And fourth came out like slightly better than third with players being on base more, which I thought was really funny. So like, we're always down to hear new perspectives, hear new stuff. DMs are always open, always down for stuff. But I think even with that, still would do the Nimmo, Lindor, Alonso, 1, 2, 3. And then it's going to sound crazy, and it's probably ass backwards to baseball people out there, but Jeff McNeil is my four-hitter.
Damn it, I thought I was going to be the only one doing that.
I just love that. I think he is the next highest on-base percentage in the lineup. If the fourth spot winds up leading off the second most innings over the year, I'm comfortable with him being a leadoff hitter. It's an even year, so I think he's going to come back and be great. Yeah. We heard he's going to be back in spring training games this week on Sunday, which is a cool thing, but he just kind of feels like, because the Mets have such a chasm from the top three guys to the rest of the order, and maybe Alvarez does elevate himself and become that like real prototypical cleanup hitter, but I think right now he profiles better as a five. So then I would go McNeil, Alvarez, Marte, and then after that, 7 through 9 kind of just becomes whoever has the hot hand, Beatty, Vientos, I don't know, DJ Stewart, whoever's getting into games. But my 4, 5, 6, I think weirdly enough, would be McNeil, Alvarez, Marte.
Yeah, I think I hate to be that we're just the same. We just talk too much. We agree on too many things here. We're too smart. That's what it is. We're just so knowledgeable about everything baseball related. But yeah, I think that's the lineup. Harrison Bader is definitely the 9-hitter in this lineup as well.
That's one lock. Yeah, but yeah, I think it'll be fun how they wind up doing it.
Okay, this one comes from Brandon Ditchek, and he says, "Do you think Brandon Nimmo can be an All-Star this year?" Yes. Brandon Nimmo should have been All-Star the last couple seasons, but the problem is that it's a lot of fan voting, and if you've ever been in the comment section of one of my videos where I'm gassing up Brandon Nimmo, as I should because he's a fantastic baseball player, they tell me I'm an idiot, I'm biased, he's not actually that good. But if you have any sort of brain, or if you're not from Atlanta, let's say, a place of low-educated, stupid people, then you would be like, oh my God, Brandon Nimmo's incredible. Like, he has better numbers than almost every center fielder in baseball. Now he's in left field, a little bit different, but he's, I don't know what, like the second or third best like left fielder in baseball probably. So yeah, he totally has an ability to be an All-Star.
Nimmo just gets screwed because he's so not flashy. Like he's just boring. He prays to God, he runs the first base, and he's a child of God. That's it. He's a child of God, baby. Like, there's no flash. He puts on his hard hat and he goes to work. And I think that kind of hurts you in something like All-Star voting, especially where you also are on a team with the Mets where, like last year, the team needs one All-Star. It's probably almost always going to be Pete Alonso, Francisco Lindor, because they're both kind of in that superstar echelon, much more than Nimmo. But in terms of production, like, Nimmo can really put up with the best of them, even on this team and the whole league. And I would like for him to start getting some All-Star nods into his 30s so he gets the recognition he deserves as a really good baseball player.
Definitely. This one comes in from Bones 0912, and the Bones are their money, and so are the Worms. Don't forget it. Do you think Jose Iglesias will start the year in the MLB the way he has been swinging the bat so far in spring? This is the million-dollar question right now, I think, with this team, because just hit a walk-off home run today. Shout out Jose Iglesias. He's got a fire song that he just made, and he wants to walk up to it, apparently, if he makes it to the majors in a game, which I don't know if there's ever been a player that's come up to their own song. Jose Reyes, actually, I think, came up to his own one. I think he came up to Siguel Riba. Fun fact, taken off Spotify. I think Fat Joe and French Montana said, you can't fucking just steal our song like that and make it Spanish. No way. What are you thinking, James? He has been swinging the bat well.
It's kind of bizarre, but right now, we mentioned it a little bit last week, Jose Iglesias has been hitting the ball as hard, if not harder, than basically every player in the Mets this spring. He's the fifth most hard hit balls on the team, only behind Lindor, Alonso, Vientos, and now tied with Starling Marte. So shout out Marte for actually starting to hit that ball between 95 and 100 miles an hour on the ground. But also one ahead of Zach Short. And even today, we've been nauseated just talking about these spring training results. That's why we had to do an episode like this to change up the vibes a little bit. But Iglesias, Short, and Wenzel are all competing for that one backup utility infielder spot that was vacated by Ronnie Mauricio. And it's kind of anyone's guess. And Iglesias probably is having the best time right now out of all those guys. I think he probably is the best infielder defensively. And
yeah,
if he's not on the team opening day, there's a good chance to see him at some point this season. He, you know what? That's kind of what spring training is for. Prove it. Do what you got to do. And I would love to talk to some of these coaches and people on these teams who are like, how much do you guys care about spring training results? Like, if you see a guy have two good weeks, like, do you actually give that credit, or do you just have your own projections and your own ideas already and just kind of roll with it?
Tell you what, if we could ever get some access to the Mets again, that would be a good question to ask some people. That would be a really good question, actually, to use in an interview. Like, do you care about spring training at all? Does it matter? What are you looking for?
I'm sure people would actually care about the answer to that question. What do you guys think about spring training? Do you care about these results? What are you looking for? Are you not looking for results? Like, looking for process? But I don't know. Would be a nice question to ask somebody if we ever had the opportunity again.
Definitely, if we ever get accepted back as a media pass there. All right, last question here. This comes from, Sand Reckoner? I don't know. That's a crazy name.
Oh, he's always in the mentions, though. He's a legend.
Respect him, though. He says, is this bridge year to evaluate the young guys as foolish as I think it is? By all accounts, we want to sign a bunch of stars in free agency next year. We have the money, but we also need the prestige as a winning franchise. Taking a big risk with question marks at 4.5 spots in our lineup? Here's what I'll tell you. The Texas Rangers literally had never won anything when they signed Corey Seager, Marcus Semien. They brought in all these good players. Jacob DeGrom, a former guy on our team. So I think prestige in terms of a franchise is a little bit bullshit. As long as you're not the Rockies, I think people are like, I'll give you a shot. Or maybe even the Angels, they continue to convince stupid people to sign there. The money. We've got the money. Show the people the money next year. And truthfully speaking, there probably wasn't anything the Mets could have done this offseason realistically that makes them one of the five favorites to win the World Series. So as fucking lame as this answer is, this is the smart approach to take. And I think that's why David Stearns was brought in to do this, to evaluate what the team is. We have to find out what Brett Beatty and Mark Vientos are going to be like at some point. We have to, because if they don't make it this year, we now know third base is a position we have to address the upcoming season. There's just spots in this lineup where figure it out. We worry about it next year with that loaded free agent class.
Yeah, and I think that the only part of the thing I'll push back on is that we have heard, especially from Trevor May, and just like talking to people around the league, that some players just won't sign contracts in New York. It's just a difficult place to live, to play, to be, to exist. It's just that is hard sometimes. So the other thing is like these guys signing contracts in Texas, like you hate that it comes in, but they don't get taxed on the games they play in Texas, which is definitely part of it. Like your contract in Texas is going to be worth more than the same contract you're signing in New York. So then we're going to have to close that gap with just more money on top of it. But I don't know, but I do think you're right that like the prestige doesn't matter. And again, I think we actually have relative prestige in terms of other franchises in the league. Like we have Francisco Lindor. People love Francisco Lindor. He's so well respected around baseball.
Voted the most stylish player in Major League Baseball by other players in a fan survey.
And the second friendliest.
Yes, and that checks. The guy's got style. I asked him to fix me. Granted, I don't think I can pull off what he said. I can't wear oversized clothing. I'll look like a malnourished child. But like at the same time, he's got drip.
No, I've been rocking baggy stuff for the last few months now. I feel what Francisco was saying. I love wearing the baggy stuff, but I don't think we don't have prestige. Like people around the league, they like and respect Steve Cohen. They like and respect the Mets. People, for the most part, know them how passionate and how crazy rabid Mets fans are, and they definitely want to win for them, especially if they have some dog in them. I think it's a real thing that people still kind of do want to play for the Mets, except for the few guys that will just never go to a big city like New York. And those guys wind up in Texas.
You're not cut out for here. And truthfully, this is going to sound like lame, but like, I don't want you to play here then, because it's going to be really difficult. This is not an easy place to play, regardless of whether or not you can cut it or you are good or you can handle it mentally. It's very, very difficult. And even like Trey Turner, obviously on the Phillies, but there's a clip of him talking about like his favorite place to play. He's like, I love playing in Citi Field. He's like, those fans bring the energy. They're so passionate. Even if you're not on the team, there is a respect, I think, that yes, we have the lull Mets bullshit or whatever. People are concerned about that. Who cares? But I think a lot of people are like, this is not a joke of a team, and it does help when your owner will pay 40-year-olds $40 million a year too.
I think this year will go a long way to it too. Just we say it every episode, but like this is going to be a grind to that baseball team. We're going to play defense. Like we're going to pitch well. Like we're going to be in games. We're going to have to win some close games if we want to actually be in the playoff picture, which by every projection system right now, we have between 20 and like a 35% chance to make it. I think that's a pretty fair estimation of this team. About a 500 team, five up, five down, things go right, things go wrong. And I think a lot of teams are probably going to gain a lot of respect for a lot of players in this roster this year because we're going to grind you the fuck down. Like we're not going to let you leave City Field with easy wins. It's never going to happen. It just isn't. Like if you put the ball in play, like we're going to catch it. Like if you get to our bullpen late innings, you're going to see some weird wild looks. Like if you have some at bats against the bottom of our order, like we're going to make you throw a bunch of pitches. Like that's going to be the vibe of this team this year, and that's the thing I'm probably most excited about.
Totally. I know we wanted to maybe talk about the MLB season, but we're coming up on like 48-50 minutes here, so I think we're going to save that for maybe another episode. We don't need to add that one here at the end. Do you have anything else real quick to talk about with the Mets, or is it time to wrap it up?
I mean, Mets just happy we're going to have baseball this week. For everyone out there, the Dodgers, Padres, and Seoul, Korea, it's going to be 6 a.m. I mean, it's going to be tough to wake up for those. I think Mark is going to be streaming them live, which is kind of wild. I haven't decided if I'm going to do that yet, but I'm just going to wake up and go on StatCast. Or maybe one day we'll stay up. I don't know. I haven't planned yet.
Can't do the stay up. I'll tell you, as someone who's tried it, that ruins your week. You're going to be all fucked up. You got to sleep and just wake up early, and then you maybe take a nap during the day. That's the way to handle it.
It's true. And also like baseball in bed, like that'd be great. Just like set the alarm for 6 and just like pull up the computer and just watch one eye open. Like what's worse than that? But like we made it, guys. Like we got through another winter. Baseball's here. It's been sunny. Like we did it again. Now we can watch and take in baseball stats every single day for the next 6 months. Like we did it. Congratulations to everybody listening.
And we noticed you guys are tired of spring training too, like we said. So that's why we had to do a little bit of a different episode. We're so tired of it too. We can't talk about Tyler McGill's spring training anymore. I just can't do it. I need to see him pitch a game that matters. But guys, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for watching. Remember to follow us on all our social media at Mets Up on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Subscribe to the Mets Up podcast YouTube channel if you have not yet done so you can see the video version of this. And if you like what you're listening to, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, drop us a rating, drop us a review, download and subscribe. Again, throw some reviews in there. We really do appreciate it. It helps us grow a lot. Follow James on Twitter at
James_Shiano.
And me at GiraffeNeckMark with a C. Thank you guys for listening and watching. And we will catch you on the next episode of the Mets Up podcast. Peace out.
Peace out. See you guys next time.